You're listening to Reality Sandwich Radio, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, and our planet, community, and economy. To learn more about the Healthful Living model, go to healthfulliving.org. Reality Sandwich is hosted by Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant, and Martin Matthews, Certified Medical Hypnotherapist. Past episodes of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco Community Sponsored Radio, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, our planet, really everything that we need to know about our collective human existence. And today we are branching out into a subject that's been fascinating Julie and I for quite a long time, astrology, specifically Vedic astrology. We're in the studio today with Sam Jeppy. He is a Vedic astrologer and a yoga instructor. He has more than 20 years of Vedic study and experience, and he's the author of The Ascendant, and he is a certified level 2 Vedic astrologer through the American Council of Vedic Astrology. A few days ago, I was speaking with some friends about this upcoming show, and they said, astrology? And I said, yeah, astrology. You know, it's been around for thousands of years. Humans have been studying the sky and have been integrating learning into their way of being and their lives for a long, long time. And there's tremendous knowledge and experience and stuff there that I think really all of us should be aware of, you know, what it is and how does it influence our collective knowledge base, and hence things that affect all of life. So I think it's a very important subject to know about. So I'm really curious. So,
absolutely. And it blends in a lot with other topics that we've talked about when we've had Renita on the show about Ayurveda and other people talking about some of the Indian traditions and you know, yoga and meditation and all those great things. So it'll be an interesting, maybe we can even talk some about the relationship of those systems as opposed to just astrology in the West like we think of.
Right, because I think the more we go forward in time, the more limited we find the strictly Western perspective to be, especially when we simply look at time and say that, well, Western world has been around for several hundred years, and we're getting more insight and knowledge today about traditional learnings and knowledge that have been around for thousands of years. And how can we take that into our mind today and say, okay, well, there's clearly something going on there that we should know more about. So let's delve in and welcome Sam to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, let's begin at the beginning.
Uh-oh. Which that far back?
Yes. Listeners are probably fairly familiar with Western astrology.
Right.
Let's get into what is Vedic astrology. How does that differ, and where does it all come from?
Well, Vedic means from the Vedas, and the Vedas were the ancient Indian scriptures. They included all kinds of things, not just astrology. They included things related to Ayurveda, as Julie just said, yoga. All of these ancient healing systems were integrated. And so the ancient Indian people developed astrology as a way to glimpse into the karmas, as they say, of our human embodied state. And see, one of the things is from the Indian sense and from the Eastern sense in general, we our truthful essence is more of spirit, not of matter. So from the spiritual perspective, we descend into form. And so all of our worldly expressions through our body are really a manifestation of our spiritual nature. And then we have a psychology to understand that consciousness that is evolving toward our true state, which is one with God consciousness. So it's a whole sort of different perspective. And so in the West, we come more from a materialist point of view, where we have a physical body, we have a psychology that tries to understand that, and then our spiritual essence, we're not really sure about, so I don't know, let's not talk about it too much, right? Mm-hmm. In the Eastern sense, it's completely different. Our essential truth is spiritual and transcendent and cosmic and eternal. And then we take an individual form in order to evolve toward the understanding of that essential nature. And the only reason we suffer in life is because we fail to understand who we truly are, which is an infinite being. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a different way to look at the world. And so these Vedic people understood that difference. And developed ways where we can transcend materiality and return to that essential nature, which is more of essence, not of substance. And so astrology was one of those systems. Ayurveda is another one, which is the medical system, which uses herbs and routines to harmonize our unique nature with, you know, with the life that we're living. And then yoga is sort of an application of all of those teachings. Now, how that's different from Western astrology is that, did you ask me that?
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. They have the same core principles, but there are some important different, there are some important differences in the mechanics. There's a different zodiac that's used based on the seasons. Western astrology bases the zodiac on the seasons. The first day of Aries, for instance, when the zodiac starts, is the first day of spring. That's different than in Vedic astrology, where the actual star group of Aries is what begins the zodiac. And there's a, those things are different now. There's been a shift, what's called the precession. It's sort of a complicated astronomical thing to explain. But it's the same signs, houses, and planets in Western astrology. So it's, I'm sorry, in Vedic astrology. So it's not based on animals or things like that, like with Chinese astrology. But there's a difference in the zodiac. So a person will find that their Vedic astrology chart, the planets move back 23 degrees, which is almost a full sign. So 2/3 of a person's planets will move back in the zodiac. Mm. So if a person was a Cancer in Western astrology, there's a 2/3 chance that it'll be Gemini in Vedic astrology. Also, Vedic astrology bases the chart, the main delineating factor is the rising sign, not the sun sign. In Western astrology, when someone says, I'm a Leo, quote, that means that the sun was in this tropical Leo when the person was born. And in Vedic astrology, the main delineating factor is the rising sign, which is based on when you, what time of day you were born that day. So there's a few important structural slash mechanical differences that, but it's the same archetypes. Another real important difference is Vedic astrology uses the stars in the chart. This is why there's a different zodiac. Western astrology doesn't use the stars. So the fact that the planet that the planets don't line up with the stars in the sky in Western astrology is really not an issue, because Western astrology doesn't use the stars in the chart. So, and there's no right or wrong about the zodiac. Western astrology works. Even though the planets don't line up with the stars that are behind them, it still works, because that tropical zodiac is important. But Vedic astrology, and it alludes to the first thing I talked about. See, in Vedic cosmology, for instance, in the Vedas, excuse me, the Rig Veda was really a book about, in many ways, it was a book about astrology, if you know how to read it that way. All of the Vedic deities are referred to in the stars. They're actually are the rulers of the different stars. There are 27 what are called nakshatras, and those are the distant stars that are used in the chart in Vedic astrology. And so the Vedic gods like Indra and Agni and Soma, I don't know if you've heard of these, but these are Vedic deities. They all rule different sections of sky based on the stars. Okay, so all those stars are used in the astrology chart in Vedic astrology. So it's a real important difference. And there are actually 27 different stars. So in Vedic astrology, you not only have a sign like Aries or Pisces, but you also have what's called a nakshatra, which is the star. And there are actually 27 of them. There are really 27 Vedic archetypes, not just 12. Which is in Western astrology. So it can be very specific, and especially for relationship astrology. Hmm. Because instead of having 12 signs like, okay, I'm a Pisces and he's a Libra, it's you have 27 choices. And there's very specific ways to measure those effects based on a lot of Ayurvedic things, in fact, based on all of the power of the other Vedic sciences, yoga, Ayurveda, etc. Mm-hmm. So that was a long answer.
So let's go back to the beginning for a second there. There were – this is India, way, way back. And how far back do the origins of Vedic astrology go? I mean, is this thousands of years? Or?
Yeah. Well, they wrote down, you know, they wrote the Vedas in, they speculate around at least 3,000 BC, the Rig Veda. But it was written after thousands of years of oral transmission as well. The reason the Vedas were written is because they realized we were falling into a dark age, which is called the Kali Yuga, and we even call the Western Dark Ages the Dark Ages. And they knew it back in that era that we were going to fall into a dark age. And it's based on the astronomy. They knew that our solar system was going to move far away from the galactic center, and that was going to bring on a very dark age. And we're still in it. And so about 5,000 years ago, they decided to write this stuff down because we weren't going to be smart enough to remember its oral transmission. So we better write this stuff down. And it was a lot of it was written in code because they didn't want everybody to know, because it's pretty powerful stuff. And it was just given to Brahmins, who are the teachers and the harbingers of the knowledge. But, you know, in this age, now we know everything. So
I'm so curious as to how these ancient cultures thousands of years ago had such knowledge about the sky, the stars, the placement of stars in the sky, the relationship between things, and that the Earth was moving further away from the center of the galaxy.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, it's every era. I mean, it's what in Vedic history it was called the Satya Yuga, which means the age of wisdom, and this knowledge existed all over at the same time. You know, the Aztecs knew it. The Egyptians knew it. All of the cultures of the world at that time knew the same. You know, the Native Americans knew it. This indigenous Dharmic understanding was pervasive on the earth at that time because it was a more enlightened age. The miracle of the Indian system is that it's the only one that's still preserved. That ancient wisdom is still preserved. And, you know, you hear it speculated that this was the Atlantean age. You know, they say the age of Atlantis that is now a buried city or something, which I don't really know if that's the case. And it's not really talked about. But obviously at that time, this more enlightened wisdom was known. At least it seems that way. Because this is where all of these ancient healing systems and this ancient holistic wisdom came from. It's just that the Indians wrote it down. And one of the reasons that it's been preserved, in fact, the main reason, is because they used astrology. They never wrote a Vedic astrology book or one of the Vedas until they found the right time. It's called a Muhurta, based on the stars. So they used astrology to build temples, to write important documents, to do all that stuff. That's why, even though India has been plundered for thousands and thousands of years, the knowledge is still intact, because they wrote the books at the right time. They knew that they would survive. And other cultures didn't use astrology. That's why this is one of the ways that astrology is very valuable in this, you know, in this modern era. If someone understands the universal energies, then you can do the right thing at the right time. If you don't, then you're going to make mistakes. And so that's what the Vedic people knew. They knew it. To say how they knew it, it's intuition. It's just like your innate wisdom. We all have a certain amount of innate wisdom. It was just very high back in that era. And so through meditation and introspection, they were able to realize these things.
Now,
it's miraculous.
Yes. So given, I'm guessing for those skeptics out there as well, I'm assuming science has been able to probably prove some of these things that they knew back then. That so, for instance, you know, I don't even. So in Ayurveda, for example, some of the we actually see results of people getting healthy or getting well. Or and I'm assuming some of these things. Not that science is the end all, but today that is the way we decide if something's true or
well,
not.
It's important. Well, right. Yeah, the astrology is a science. Mm-hmm. See, in the West, we have this whole. It's a great point that you're making, because, you know, it's just assumed that astrology is not science. This is just some like wacky belief.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are, some wacky, metaphysical, you know. It's Vedic astrology. When you look at a Vedic astrology book, it's a science book. I'll tell you this much. You know, in school we learned that, you know, I think it was Galileo discovered Saturn or something like that. Not even close, okay? the Vedic astrology books have the Surya Siddhanta, which is probably a 1000 BC or earlier, had all the orbits of the planets calculated, their size, all this stuff. They knew it way back then.
Wow.
Thousands of years ago.
Wow.
So they didn't discuss, and it's not, and they say they didn't have telescopes. They knew all about this stuff.
Wow.
Back then.
So that brings me to Pluto. What did the Vedic astrology say about Pluto? Was it around back then, and should it be around today?
Well, this is another important difference of Vedic astrology, is it doesn't use the planets beyond Saturn in the traditional approach. And the reason is because it's based more on the observable planets. So as far as Pluto, relative to Vedic astrology, it's not a planet that's used.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that they didn't know it was there. In fact, they did refer to other planets that would be discovered later, but that were not meant to be used in Vedic astrology. One of the main reasons is because the planets rule different signs. And once you start bringing in non-visible planets, see, what astrology is showing, what Vedic astrology, what the word in Vedic thinking is Jyotish, which means the science of light. Okay, light is what illuminates and allows us to see in the dark. When we're in the dark, we can't see. So a Jyotishi, or a person who does Vedic astrology, when he looks at the chart, he can see where the person's going, where the person's soul is going, what it's evolving toward in this lifetime. And it wakes up. The visible planets bring light to us. We can see the planets out to Saturn through our eyes. The non-visible planets, maybe they have certain shadow inferences, but we can't see them. So they're not used in the astrology chart. The stars we can see.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes one of the criticisms of Vedic astrology is, well, but it doesn't use Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. How can that work? Well, it uses 27 stars, though.
Mm.
We can see the stars. Stars are magnificent beings. Mm. I mean, look at our – I mean, it's just a star is an amazing being, and they're considered beings. They're not just like this – if someone can explain to me how a star does what it does, then I'll say it's not an amazing being, but it's a pretty incredible being. So each one of these stars are like the brothers of our sun. So it uses those visible references.
Hmm.
So Pluto, having been reclassified, I'm not going to go off on that unless you want me to tell you about that, but it's not used in Vedic astrology, but it's only the visible planets that are used.
Got it. Because it
shows how our visible, how our life on Earth, the tangible, visible life we're living, leads to our cosmic goal.
Hmm. Makes sense? Yeah.
So I heard you just mention knowledge about the path forward in one's life, or really in perhaps all life, based on this knowledge that we discern from the stars, from the universe. Mm. How would one today, how would this serve one today? Why would somebody today, just looking at their life and saying, you know what insight can I glean from turning myself onto Vedic astrology?
We're all moving somewhere, you know. If our life doesn't have a goal, then it feels useless. So astrology is as relevant now as it's ever been. Vedic astrology, you know, certainly offers that sort of glimpse into where the person's, you know, where the person is going. So one of the things is, and really one of the main things that separate us from, you know, the other animals or the plants, life forms, is that we want our life to have a goal. It's not enough to just hang out and satisfy our desires. Otherwise, that's what we would do. We would just hang out and, you know, satisfy ourselves. But our life has to have meaning, or else we suffer. It's just a quality of humanity. We need to feel like we're growing towards something, and think about what that means. Just think about the implication of that. Why is there such a discontent? Just a certain divine discontent with being a human being. I mean, especially here in the West, we have everything in some ways that we could want, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have plenty of food and plenty of, you know, we can have friends and comforts, but yet there's an angst, because what does it all mean? Because there's a part of us that's this infinite being. Why do we always need to feel like we're growing towards something? Growing toward what? But it's just a part of the human psyche.
Mm-hmm.
So astrology shows what we're actually trying to grow toward in this lifetime. It's related to the planet Jupiter. Jupiter is the part of us that's expansive and big. The thing is, we're this infinite being, yet we're in this finite form with this limited understanding.
Mm.
And this is the cause of our suffering, according to the Dharmic paths of not just India, but all of the Dharmic paths, even the Native American traditions, the Aztecs, all of the Dharmic faiths. Dharma is just our higher purpose, God's law or universal law, which is that we're not just a mind-body organism that comes here for some arbitrary reason and then dies and who the hell knows why.
Mm-hmm.
That's not why we're here. We're here to evolve toward an essential truth. And so astrology shows that vision. It gives that insight and allows, you know, what an astrologer can do if he's skilled enough is see what the person is trying to really learn in this lifetime and where their energy is going to get tangled up. And especially Vedic astrology, because it's innately enmeshed with other Vedic sciences, can give remedies, and they work.
Mm.
Vedic astrologers also prescribe, I mean, one of the reasons I do Vedic astrology is because I've been doing yoga for such a long time. I can prescribe mantras that help people, which and also yoga postures. Ayurvedic doctors are usually either trained in astrology or work with astrologers because you can see the timing of illness, the time to apply certain types of medicines, all these timing factors. Astrology is a science, and it works.
Mm.
So the answer is that it's very relevant for people who want to know where they're going, and that's what we all do. We all want to know where we're going and why we're stuck in certain routines.
Mm.
And these deep routines, what are called samskaras or vasanas, are the deep mental grooves that we keep going over and over again so that we learn. You ever notice, why do I keep making the same mistakes over and over again? An astrologer can see that, say, this is why you need to, you know. So each one of the planets has a nature that gets expressed in a worldly way that can create more attachment to our separate nature, or a transcendent nature that aligns us with its more universal quality. So you see what planet is hanging them up, and you try to say, okay, rather than focus on asserting your opinions and fighting for that, use the nature of Mars to be disciplined and fight the internal battle, not the external battle, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So what other types of things, you mentioned mantras, what other types of things would someone suggest?
Based on Vedic energetics, Vedic science uses five elements, okay? The four Western elements of earth, water, fire, and air, but also space, which is consciousness, okay, which is not in the chart. That's your free will, is the consciousness, whereas our four embodied elements of life are earth, water, fire, and air. So earth, you heal earth through smell. Anything we can smell contains earth. This is an Ayurvedic principle. So things like aromatherapy. And it's very good because it's very grounding. And, you know, I mean, smell is very grounding. It grounds you in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it has memories and all that stuff associated with it. Water is taste, ruled by taste. So herbal therapies. Each planet has a taste. Each planet has a fragrance. Each planet has all these things. Fire is related to sight. Anything we can see is touched by fire, right?
Mm.
If we can't see it, I mean, if there's no fire, there's no light. So fire you heal by color therapy, which includes gem therapy. So wearing different colors. Someone wears black all the time, they're going to be depressed. It's going to be black is an isolating color. Wear white and see your aura expand. Some people, you know, and it's pretty amazing what happens. I was talking to a friend of mine. I went to visit my guru Amichi was here. She's an Indian saint. She was just here last for the last couple of weeks, and everyone wears white around the saint. And a friend was like, man, this is the only time I ever wear white. I usually always wear black. She's this, like, New Yorker. And she's like, man, it's really hard because I start wearing white, and suddenly, like, my boundaries are just gone. I feel so light. It's like, yeah, because it expands your aura, right? And, like, for instance, Jupiter is yellow. Mars is red. So each one of these planets. And you can also wear a gem, which is also related to the related to the color of the planet. And then air is healed by touch. So, for instance, massage and like oil, like hot oil massage or just regular massage touch therapy. Mm-hmm. And then the main – and then space is healed by mantras because space moves through – I'm sorry, sound moves through space. So when you say a mantra – it resonates through space. And mantras are the great they're the great remedy because they orient all of the grosser elements. The elements build on themselves. Earth is the heaviest, water is the next, fire is the next, air is the next. See how they get lighter and lighter, and then space is the next. Air moves in space, fire disperses into air. Water grows plants, which you burn and makes fire. This is how the elements build on themselves. So when you say mantras, it resonates through space, consciousness, which orients air, which is our thoughts, are related to air. Air orients fire, which is related to our active emotions. Fire orients water, which is related to our feelings and passive emotions. And then water orients earth, which is related to our body. This is why mantras are the great remedy. You say mantras over and over again, and it orients your whole being, and they work.
And so these are the kinds of things you can help clients with when they come to you.
All the time.
So that's great. So not only it's like, you will meet the man of your dreams in 2 weeks, you actually can work with some of your challenges and actually work on finding ways to support yourself.
Well, clearly there's so much more going on here. I mean, we're talking about thousands of years of learning and an orientation to really all things in the universe, of which we are, you know, a minute component, but certainly, you know, connected to it all. And
And in truth, we're not a minute component. In the highest – sorry to interrupt. In the highest sense, we are the universe itself. Mm-hmm. We're just under the illusion that we're a minute component or that we're separate. Mm-hmm. And these techniques realign us with our cosmic universal nature. Mm. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Makes a lot of
right,
sense.
Right. And that's getting to the depth of this, as opposed to, like Julie was saying, people often think, oh, just, you know, tell me about my relationship or how, you know, how next Thursday's going to be.
And that's important,
like,
too. We're living a life.
Sure. But there are deeper ponderances that one can come to you about, and I'd be curious if are there any off the cuff anecdotes that you're able to share with respect to something, you know, a client that came to you, whether it's a, you know, a life challenge or a question or even a physical something or other that.
Yeah, there are a lot. I'll tell you something that's interesting is, and it's one of the hard things. You know, I teach astrology too. I have quite a few students here and there, and one of the hard things is to realize, you know, there's a lot of unpredictable things in astrology that you wouldn't always notice. Like, for instance, sometimes really strong, a really, quote, strong planet in a chart will create havoc in someone's life to teach them a lesson that's really hard to learn, but it gives them the knowledge to overcome the thing. And I'll give you a good example. I had a client, you know, about a month ago, and she had a couple what are called exalted planets, really powerful planets. And when she started running the planetary cycle related to an exalted Jupiter, which you would think, oh, man, she was a Sagittarius with an exalted Jupiter. Now, Jupiter rules Sagittarius, which, without getting too technical, would show that this person's ruling planet is exalted. Wow, this should be a great time for her. But it's exalted in the eighth house, which has to do with problems and unexpected problems. This person's Jupiter period started, and she developed, I believe it was muscular dystrophy, and she's been in a wheelchair for 15 years. Mm. Now, this is a powerful planet. This is a powerful thing, and this was to free her from a certain mental predisposition. Being in a wheelchair, and you hear people say all the time that, you know, getting sick was the greatest thing that ever happened to me and things like that. And you see this in astrology. it's very unpredictable. It's hard to say what's going to lead a person to the light, lead a person to the truth. This is what this person needed in this lifetime in order to learn what she needed to learn. And she's flourishing through it. Hmm. Through our reading, she was wondering exactly what to do now in her life. She's had a lot of luck. She has a lot of really strong, actually, she has two exalted planets. And so even though she's been in a wheelchair for this amount of time, she's continued to work. She's continued to work powerfully. But she's wondering how to transition. And so it was obvious that based on what's happening in her life now, it's time for her to be an inspiration to others who have been in a wheelchair and who have also been marginalized physically, to be an example to how this can be a very empowering thing and how you don't have to let it hold you back and you can still be an example and still live a powerful life. So I don't know if that's a good example. Mm. But mm-hmm. So there's so many examples of how unpredictable life is to teach us something. I mentioned that because what looks like it's going to be, quote, a good thing or a bad thing is actually just the perfect thing. And mm-hmm. our notions of good and bad are oftentimes, and in many ways, the only reason why we suffer. What I've learned through astrology is that we're always living the perfect life. We're getting exactly what we need all the time. The only thing is that we don't understand the lesson, and that's why we suffer. Mm. And so I'm always having to try to acquaint a person, get them out of the good, bad. We tend to think, if I satisfy my desires, it's good. If I don't, it's bad. But we also don't realize, you know, maybe the desire I didn't satisfy this time was actually a good thing. Because sometimes we don't know what we want, or we want the wrong thing. So by being deprived what we think we want, it's actually an opportunity to learn something, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So just sort of acquainting a person with the, you know, with the glory of their life, and that, and just helping them understand why what they're not understanding is really helpful.
Sure. You are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. You're listening to Julie and Martin Matthews on Reality Sandwich, and we are speaking with Sam, is it Jeppy?
Yeah, that's fine.
On Ayurvedic astrology, and maybe you can give your website for people that are just tuning in.
You could go to sfyoga.net, like San Francisco Yoga, S as in Sam, F as in Frank, yoga.net.
Great.
Now, also, Sam, you can look at relationships between people.
Yeah.
Your point of origin for this inquiry was, or for Julie and I guess for your average client, was our date of birth,
yeah,
location, mm-hmm. where in the world we were born, mm-hmm. and the specific time.
Yeah, that's right.
And from there, you can glean a chart, or how do you, how did you come to have the charts that were there?
Yeah, well, that's just where the planets were at that specific moment in time,
okay.
on that day when you were born. Yeah, and, you know, I never try to marginalize the life that people are living, because that's how it all plays out, you know. I mean, relationships are so important. I think in many ways one of the reasons we come here with a body is so we can learn to deal with other people and mm-hmm. and to deal with that difficulty, because it's hard. I mean, we're facing like a mirror image of ourselves in a relationship.
Mm. Right.
It's one of the biggest things.
And you were chatting with us before we came on the air. You were looking at both of our charts and you were saying a few things about us. And I'm always listening for – you know, my mind is always that critical voice going, okay, good. Is that pretty generic or is that,
okay,
you know.
Yeah, huh?
But I got the feeling on a couple of points, it was like, okay, that was pretty out there. I don't think you would have, you know, guessed at that one generally, some
yeah.
of the comments that you had said right. about
you
our relationship for Julie and I. So
about the teacher thing? About teaching each other?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. There were a couple of things there yeah. that just, all right, that was pretty right on.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know that you know necessarily generally universally applicable, like with every couple you'd say that. So gives me a sense as a listener that, okay, there's...
Yeah, well, you guys have some good compatibility. There. Like I said, I was relieved. I was telling you that people tell me, oh, we're just about to get married and we just want to confirm that it's all good. And I'm like, okay, you want to know the answer, I'll tell you.
And then there's the interesting component of being able to look at...
I think look at what's going on today. So you
yeah.
can compare mm-hmm. our charts to what's going on today, right? And you can kind of see what's coming up for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to take that on the air?
Well, we could take that off the air, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but we could also, and then we were saying we could also talk about what's happening in the world.
In the world,
the positions of the stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have a question. You were talking
yeah.
about that we went into this big dark age. And, of course, my question is always, when are we coming out of the dark age?
Good question. And there's some a bit of, obviously there's a bit of discrepancy about that sort of thing, but according to a very prominent Vedic scholar and enlightened visionary of the last century named Sri Yukteswar, who is actually the guru of Paramahansa Yogananda, who is pretty famous, wrote the Autobiography of a Yogi, pretty famous book. We are already out of the what's called Kali Yuga or Dark Age, and we're on the ascending node coming out of the Dark Age, which is called the Dwapara Yuga, which I tend to believe simply because, and it's timed with the Renaissance. Since the Renaissance, we have been waking up more. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were definitely dumber before mm-hmm. that. That's what the Renaissance started. We started to wake up more since then. So we're on the ascending end of the, heading toward the Satya Yuga again, but we're not out of it. The way it worked is that we had the Satya Yuga for thousands of years before, and then we started to descend into the Kali Yuga from what was called the Treta Yuga, so we're about 500 years on the other end as we started to descend into the Kali Yuga from about 500 BC. We're about 500 BC, but on the other end. So we, from about 500 BC, we started to get dumber and dumber and dumber and dumber and dumber until about zero, like the year of, and then from zero to about 1500, we were in the Dark Age. And then from about 1500, we've been waking up more and more and more now. And we've seen it exponentially. It was even in India, because there all of the Indian knowledge was kind of buried too until the end of the 19th century. It started to wake up again. All this yoga stuff, it got buried too. Mm-hmm. So we got a while to get, and we're not going to see it in this lifetime, but there's an advantage to being born in this time because our soul makes a lot of progress in a darker era. Because it's harder to make spiritual progress at this time, the more we do, the more progress we make because it's harder. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's like rowing your boat when your oars are in water, you can move a lot quicker because there's more resistance. Mm-hmm. If your oars were in air, you can't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So when it's a lighter era, the Satyuga, the age of light and illumination, it's harder to make progress because it's already an easier paradigm to begin with. Mm-hmm. So if we really work in this era, we can speed up our karma very quickly and really learn. We can really learn a lot at this time. So it's nothing to be cynical about. Those of us who are trying to, bring consciousness more to the people and with ourselves primarily, can take solace in that. We don't have to become cynical about the world because it's easy to have that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and often it does take severe atrocities for us to have the contrast to look at that and to have that really move us to action.
It's known in the Vedic world that they say, why is the world here? Why is it so much pain? Why is it so difficult? And it's to provide a contrast. You're exactly right. It's like a chalkboard. If you draw on white chalk on a white background, you won't see it. That's why in this era it's much easier to make spiritual progress. If you put forth even a little effort, you get a lot back. The contrast is so stark here in this era.
Hmm. Oh, I had a thought and then I forgot what the thought was. You can go ahead and ask a question.
So, given where we are in time, and what can you tell us about what's coming up?
Well, we recently just had a pretty major shift. I predicted this earlier in the year when at the very end of October, there was a major shift of all four outer planets. Well, actually, the four slow-moving planets in Vedic astrology, Jupiter, Saturn, and then the nodes, all changed signs at the end of October, which was right before that major election that happened. And so months ago when I saw, this is going to happen, especially seeing where the planets were moving, I predicted that, the Democrats were going to sweep the Republicans out. It's going to be a paradigm shift in accountability in this country, not just this country, but in the world for things like the war and other types of power structures. The reason is because Saturn and the South Node are now both in the sign of Leo. And Leo is the sign of the king. So all the kings of the world have seen their power curtailed, or they're going to be curtailed even a little more. It's just sort of starting for the next year or so. So you see even like Tony Blair has been somewhat marginalized, and our president and that administration has, well, look, Rumsfeld got the axe and all this stuff. So it's because those who were somewhat arrogant with power or felt somewhat omnipotent are being held accountable now. So in the short term, we're going to see some of this right now for the next couple years. And there's, you know, it's possible that there could be some, you know, some real difficulties as these power structures have to let go. It doesn't happen easily. So that's in general, but there's a lot of possibilities for the next couple of years for spiritual development, because mainly the planet Jupiter you really look at for this, he's in the sign of Scorpio, which is about digging deeply into things and facing our fears and insecurities. So we're going to have to do that. And then he moves into Sagittarius, which is about inspiration and refocusing on the goal. So for spiritually minded people, there will be a lot of opportunities to be spiritual and to work hard to, you know, in the spirit of service and things like that.
When is it shifting from the one to the other? From the one that it's in now to the later one.
You mean the Age of Light and things like that?
Yes.
Oh, that's going to be, there'll be hundreds of years.
Oh, no, I mean, oh. I'm in terms of, you were just talking about
Jupiter. Jupiter going, okay. Yeah, so Jupiter's going to be in Scorpio until around the end of next year. And then he'll go into Sagittarius next year through 2008. So for the next couple of years, Scorpio is a sign where Jupiter is now, is a sign of digging deeply into our, strengthening our emotional responses to things. And also our irrational insecurities, mainly about our emotions and things like that. We're mainly emotional creatures, really. Mm-hmm. We follow our feelings and our instincts. And Scorpio is where we have all these emotional fears. Our buttons get pushed and we imagine all these things coming up. Jupiter is the great healer. His Sanskrit name is Guru, and he's related to teachings, and those teachings that take us far in life, that take us toward our goal. So the next year or so until next November will be a great time for us to explore our personal demons, if you will, and bring them to light. And this is really what we need to do in order to heal our own heart first. Many people try to make a difference in the world, but they're so overcome with their own, you know, insecurities that it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So this would be a good time to really clean our own house emotionally, face those things. We will have the grace of Guru to help us. So a great time for all teachings, whatever it is, whether it's something related to yoga or whether it's related to, you know, any sort of personal growth will be really supported the next couple of years.
Mm. Well, I find that to be in line with my own personal studies of expansion of consciousness that we're experiencing here in the world, my own curiosities about the Mayan calendar and where what they say we're going through right now with respect to further integration of right brain energies and our own intuition and, right. and our own emotional base, and that butting up against our legacy programming, cerebral left brain linear kind of focus. Yeah, yeah. And having to bring that all of that back out in front of us and integrate.
I thought of my question. Oh. It was about the Mayan calendar. So, you know, according to the Mayan calendar in
2012.
Yes, 6 years. That is supposed to be the new age or the new world or whatever you want to call this new time. And I guess I'm curious, and, you know, they see time as speeding up and enlightenment or consciousness expanding very quickly from now until then. And then after then, I think I don't see it as the end of the world being a bad thing. I see it as the end of this, you know, dense third world, right? Third dimension to something bigger. How does Vedic astrology compare or
there's some interesting things that will happen in 2012 astronomically. There's no real direct correlation with Vedic astrology per se to 2012. And I really haven't looked into it so much, although I find it to be quite interesting, mm-hmm. and I think things are speeding up anyway. I'm regret I don't have a great answer about 2012 per se, but looking at what's happening astronomically at that time, I think it. I will say this is that I don't think that it's going to be the people. Many have speculated it's some sort of, the world is going to change, world's going to end type of thing.
Right.
There, I don't see that. I think there'll be some sort of shift. If anything, it'll be more interdimensional, like within the consciousness of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that their calendar is based on Venus, and there's some interesting stuff happening with Venus retrograde cycle at that time. So it should be interesting.
Hmm.
I'll look into it more.
Yeah, I'd be curious.
Well, there definitely seems to be something going on. I mean, we're just in our conversation today, we're talking about greater numbers of people waking up, becoming curious, introspective, knowledgeable about the nature of their world and their role in it. And all of these I look at as clear signs of expansion of the
Absolutely.
Collective consciousness of humanity. So when I get a sense of what we're going through is a significant awakening of – I mean, we can define it. We can spend many shows on that. But – clearly something's going on, and I was listening just today, and more the numbers of people now that are gravitating away from mainstream media, the growth of alternative media sources, people seeking additional methods of getting their knowledge and information about our reality, and clearly that cannot not trickle down into the collective reality that we're all a part of here in our world. So where is that going? It's going faster. It's changing faster. The more that we are plugged into the internet and our own created modes of knowledge and information rather than the unilateral dissemination of information through major media sources. So all these things are happening, and I find that it gets corroborated in so many different fields where I look. And today being another one of those major fields of human study and knowledge and endeavor, where there's something else there that they see, that this field sees about the time that we're living in now.
Something that's interesting that you mentioned at the beginning was about Western medicine and Western paradigms in general, and how it – and Julie also mentioned about science and the proof of these Vedic teachings or these old Vedic teachings. Now Western – so many traditional Western healing systems – like even allopathic medicine and like allopathic doctors, they prescribe meditation, they prescribe
mm-hmm.
yoga,
mm-hmm.
they prescribe, these things, this is a real breakthrough. I mean, they're starting to really look seriously much more so at like diet,
mm-hmm.
and addressing the source rather than the cure. Now, of course, there's still all kinds of crazy things with, pharmaceutical companies and drugs and stuff like that. But, there are so many, and I have a lot of clients who are allopathic doctors and things like that who want to know how to transition from that system into something more holistic
mm.
and study Ayurveda and study things because they realize the wisdom here
mm-hmm.
and that it's not just, that these paradigms are worn out and even modern psychology now, dealing with things like transpersonal psychology, which prescribes, again, meditation, yoga, breath work, they call it, breath work. Breath work is pranayama. It's in the Vedas, breathing.
Mm.
I mean, breath work is yoga.
Right.
It's nothing new. it's just nothing new. It's been around forever. And so one of the main things about these Vedic sciences is once you learn Ayurveda, once you learn yoga, astrology, you don't even really have to learn. I mean, you can get an astrology reading once in a while to have someone help you with some things. But Ayurveda and yoga in particular as lifestyle regimens, and you'd be amazed at how much it can just get you right on track.
Mm-hmm.
Even with Ayurveda, even just knowing your prakriti and which foods to eat and like if you're vata, pitta, kapha or what
mm-hmm.
that balance is. And then even online, if you just go to an Ayurveda website and fill out the survey and just follow that – amazing what it would do in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Just that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my very, very first entry into alternative therapies was Ayurveda. And
it's
my first love.
Incredible.
That's right. Julie was looking into Ayurveda when we first met. And I said, this lady is going to be cool.
There you go.
That was over 8 years ago. Well, we've been speaking today with Sam Jeppe. He is a Vedic astrologer, yoga instructor here in San Francisco.
Yes. Right?
People can find you at sfyoga.net.
That's right, sfyoga.net. And I do readings for people all over the world, even now with Skype. I do them people in Japan, so I can do readings over the phone. They don't have to be in San Francisco. If you want to get an astrology reading, send me an email or whatever, be in touch.
Great.
So we've been speaking about inherently human knowledge and wisdom, and just really gets to the core of what we speak about here on Reality Sandwich and what we're all about with healthful living in a broader sense. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be back next week. Yes, Julie will be on with naturopathic doctor Beverly Yates.
Yes, we're going to be talking about heart health for black women.
She's a phenomenal lady. She's up in Marin County, and she's going to be down, I think, here in the studio talking with Julie next Thursday at noon. This show and all other past shows of Reality Sandwich can be found at realitysandwichradio.com.
Let me say an announcement or two before we go off here. So this Sunday, December 10th, I'm going to be teaching a cooking class. So for all of you that have been hearing about fermented foods, then we've been talking about sauerkraut and yogurt and kombucha and making stocks and soaking your grains and all of those great things for digestion and immune support during this coming up flu season. Feel free to check out our website, healthfulliving.org, for more information on that class. Starts at 10 o'clock on Sunday. And then also the Nourishing Our Children campaign is going to be doing a free talk at Natural Resources December 14th from 6:30 to 8:30. And you can find out more about that at naturalresources-sf.com.
My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living.
And I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living.
This has been Reality Sandwich. We'll be back next Thursday at noon. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco. This show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com, where you can also read about upcoming shows. To learn more about Julie Matthews or Martin Matthews, go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.